Under the Golden Dome is supported by the Iowa Bankers Association. Bankers across Iowa are ready to help Iowans reach their financial goals to get them where they want to go. Learn about the difference of Iowa banks by following Iowa Bankers on Facebook and Twitter.
From Iowa Public Radio, this is the weekly legislative show Under the Golden Dome. I'm John Pemble.
I just want to start this morning by offering my sympathy and prayers to those that were impacted by last week's school shooting in Florida.
On Monday, during Governor Reynolds' weekly press conference, she talks about the shooting in a Florida high school that killed 17 people.
You probably all have heard of the phrase, if you see something, say something.
This is the name of a campaign that started in 2002 by the Metropolitan Transportation Authority in New York. It encourages people to report suspicious activity after New York City was the target of a terrorist attack. The campaign is now part of the Department of Homeland Security. They partner with organizations and states.
We all have a role to play in safety, and in fact, Iowa has held a similar public awareness campaign in 2016. But because this message is so important, we're reaching out again to the public.
The first 15 minutes of this weekly half-hour conference focuses on the campaign. Members from the National and State Department of Homeland Security speak about the program, as does Commissioner of the Iowa Department of Public Safety, Roxanne Ryan.
Last week's shooting in Parkland, Florida was certainly a sad reminder that reporting suspicious activity to local law enforcement is a key factor in trying to protect all of our children and our communities. Local law enforcement agencies are essential when it comes to public safety. They know their communities and they have contacts with state and federal officials so that they can seek assistance to be able to address whatever issue it is that is identified at the local level.
In five states, there are what is referred to as red flag laws. They give law enforcement the ability to take firearms away from people believed to be a danger to themselves or others. Governor Reynolds is asked if the Iowa legislature should pursue red flag laws.
I just don't think that there's one solution. And so as we take a look at making sure that we're doing everything we can to keep people safe, there's a host of, we have to look at it in a holistic manner. And so that means taking a look at see something, say something. That means being familiar with our surroundings. That means making sure that we're addressing mental health concerns. We're making sure that we have mental health training. That's why, you know, I'm really excited about some of the steps that we're taking in this legislative session, especially when you talk about the partnership with Des Moines University and NAMI. This is a great example of getting primary doctors the training that they need to identify the early warning signs. By us doing that and the number of primary docs that Des Moines University graduates that are in rural Iowa and working with our communities and with our local law enforcement, that's a great opportunity to start to identify the early warning signs.
She says among the things to consider are the breakdown of families and violence in television and video games.
You know, something's at the root of these individuals that I'm not sure any law or even consequences that are on the books could prevent them, and so we need to really understand and see the early warning systems and do everything we can that, you know, to prevent, but to think about it in a holistic manner.
Because the crime in Florida involved a gun, Governor Reynolds is asked if further gun control laws are needed in Iowa.
We do have reasonable, responsible gun laws on the books, but it's not just that. We have to continue to look at it in a holistic manner, and we need to look at all of the things that I just listed.
The governor is asked if she supports a bill in the Senate that would allow a person like a parent to carry a firearm with them when transporting their child to school.
What I think is great about the process is this is an opportunity, in light of some of the things that have happened, to take a piece of legislation like that, to have a committee, a subcommittee, a committee hearing, to bring all interested parties together and to talk about the pros and cons and why it may work and why it may not work, but that's part of the process. And I'm sure you'll see more people engaged in that conversation, but, you know, I think we need to let the process do its place. And so from that perspective, that means anything that comes up, I'm not, you know, we'll see where it ends up.
Ultimately, you'll have the final say.
Well, but I've said to you about 101 times, it just doesn't do me any good to speculate on bills until I see what that, there's all kinds of criteria that could be involved in that, different nuances. So I'll wait and see what it looks like in its final form and continue to encourage all stakeholders to come together as we have a conversation about protecting.
Another proposal is to arm teachers and school personnel. Is that a concept you would like to pursue?
I'm willing to have a conversation about all of those. But
the press conference is abruptly cut short by the Capitol's alarm system. Per policy, the administration evacuates the building. Turns out it's a false alarm. The press conference isn't the only thing interrupted. Upstairs, there is a public hearing about removing funding from this year's budget. As a University of Iowa student testifies against cutting higher education,
the state's student loan default rate on students 3 years after graduation was 17.3%, which is the highest in the county country.
If you can pause for just one moment while we get a better sense of what's happening.
The House is hearing testimony for a de-appropriations bill. The de-appropriation is where some of the money previously allocated to a department is going to be taken away. This hearing is about a House bill that will reduce some department budgets for this fiscal year. It is projected the state will be $35 million short before July. Governor Reynolds released her suggested cuts in January. The Senate followed with $44 million of proposed cuts, and the House in turn has a different plan amounting to $32 million. Iowans testify about the cuts in the House bill.
Good morning. My name is Cody Olson, and I'm from Iowa State University.
The Iowa Board of Regents has the largest cut, and this worries ISU student Cody Olson.
How can students who come from a low-income background, such as myself and my sister, find the support they need to go to school in a state that's ranked dead last in financial aid support?
The proposed cut for Iowa State under the Senate bill was $8 million. It is now less under the House, but Olson says any reduction will lead to problems.
Your cuts mean faculty furloughs, canceled classes, and discontinued student aid. Many students already second-guess their ability to complete school, and your proposal may be a final nail in the coffin for hundreds.
In the House de-appropriation, the University of Northern Iowa would not receive a cut. The judicial branch originally had a $4.8 million cut. The House recommends $1.6 million, something Steve Eckley of the Iowa State Bar Association doesn't like, but prefers this smaller cut.
Our concern is that the $1.6 million in de-appropriation will still cause significant disruption in the operation of the judicial system here in Iowa, affecting all 99 counties. These include people involved in domestic abuse cases who need immediate attention to their very charged situations, mothers and fathers involved in domestic relations matters, ending marriages and affecting children, the prosecution of criminal cases that may ultimately be dismissed because of the speedy trial requirements, civil cases involving individuals, small businesses, and large businesses all around the state have been set for trial for over a year, but might be continued for 6 months or yet another year. Delays causing tremendous increased costs and inconvenience to all parties. All of this affecting either directly or indirectly over 500,000 cases that must be processed through the Iowa judicial system each year. All of these cases affect citizens, cities, counties, and businesses throughout the state. While it is up to the judicial branch to determine how to manage any further budget cuts, we as attorneys know the cuts will affect court services in all 99 counties. Whether it be your constituents who are waiting to close a probate matter so that the proceeds of an estate can be distributed, criminal cases that need to be prosecuted, or civil cases that have been set for trial for months and even years, they will all be negatively impacted.
Another department with a large cut is the Department of Corrections, $3.4 million. Danny Homan from the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees Union argues this is dangerous.
Over the last 12 months, the Department of Corrections was cut at every opportunity. $5.5 million was cut from the 2017 mid-year cuts last January. 2018 budget set last April, DOC was cut by another $2.1 million. And now, with only 4 months left in this fiscal year, you are proposing another $3.4 million cut. That is $10 million in 1 year. Excuse me, $11 million in 1 year.
The Department of Human Services, the second largest organization in the state, had a $6.2 million cut from the Senate. The House proposes $4.3. Director Jerry Foxhoven says his department has been preparing for a large cut for several months.
What we were committed to was that we would not cut benefits to the people we serve. We serve about a third of all Iowans, that we would not cut the benefits, that we would not cut beds from our institutions, and that we would not cut caseworkers, that we would not exacerbate the problems that they already have. And so we designed a budget that was able to do that based on some lower caseloads, not in terms of child welfare, lower caseloads in terms of other issues like promised jobs, Iowa, and so forth. As the economy becomes better where people have jobs, there are fewer caseloads for some of the other things that we do. We also maximize the use of some federal block grants to be able to make that happen. As this body then proposed some additional cuts, we again tried to see if we could meet those cuts and still stay with those same standards, which means that we aren't going to lay off social workers, we're not going to cut beds to institutions, we're not going to reduce benefits to people from the people that we serve. And we are able to do that with the proposal that you've given us. Going beyond that, maybe not, but we're able to do that specifically by some of those things that we talked about earlier, but also having the DSH payments and the GME payments going to the public hospitals, which would include the University of Iowa Hospital and Broadlands Hospital. By doing that, and only for two months of this year, having them assume that will make it possible for us to be able to both meet the cuts that the governor originally proposed based on the caseloads, and then this little piece meets the additional amount that this body is proposing. So I basically am telling you that at the level that you're proposing right now, we can live with that. Much beyond that would be a challenge for us.
These are the departments facing the largest cuts. Other reductions under the House plan include $500,000 for community colleges, $141,000 for Iowa Workforce Development, and $20,000 for the governor's office. These cuts have a way to go in the House and Senate chambers. The process might not be complete until March. Remember, these are for reductions for the fiscal year ending in 4 months, which means affected departments have to eliminate funding from what they are doing right now. In March, the Revenue Estimating Conference will release a new projection. For the past year, revenue has not significantly grown, leading to these mid-year fiscal cuts. As to the budget that begins on July 1st, if the last session was any indication, the legislature isn't likely to address this until April. This is Under the Golden Dome, a weekly podcast about the legislative session. I'm John Pemble. Rural school districts are facing high costs to transport kids across great distances. It's the result of schools merging over the years. The House has a bill that would add $11 million of aid for districts with the greatest transportation cost per pupil. According to data from the Iowa Department of Education last year, the state median for what districts spend on transportation per pupil is $380. But in rural districts like Van Buren, it's $907 per pupil. In Calhoun County, Manson Northwest Webster Superintendent Justin Daggett says his district has a small student size of 750, and they are from a large geographic area.
I'm just looking at our transportation report right now, and our average cost per pupil transported is $2,083. Now, that's 284 students transported to and from school.
Daggett says any kind of savings his district can get from a school transportation bill will be significant.
It all comes out of the general fund, so that's also the fund that we pay our teachers with. And, and another part of this that's unrelated but indirectly related is in rural Iowa, it's sometimes hard to fill open spots. So as far as staff goes, teachers. So when you're really limited in what you can pay teachers, it just makes it harder to fill those really hard positions to fill.
Last year, a bill increasing the funding for school transportation passed in the Senate 47-0. It has a funding mechanism for 3 years. This week, the House takes up the bill. Representative Walt Rogers is the floor manager.
Senate File 455 deals with per pupil equity and transportation funding. Mr. Chair, there is an amendment.
The amendment adds even more money to address smaller school districts because they have fewer students, like in Calhoun County. But this amendment only funds transportation for 1 year, which changes it from the Senate version of 3 years. Representative Cindy Winkler files another amendment that would return this bill to the Senate's three-year funding.
The $11.2 million that is appropriated in the Appropriation Committee amendment is one-time money. I remember huge debates about the use of one-time money for school funding. One-time money cannot be used for ongoing expenditures. It can certainly alleviate transportation costs one time, but you can't count on one-time money. One-time money is just that.
Winkler says her amendment is the true flavor of the Senate version.
It also ask that we have an interim committee before the third year starts so that we can evaluate where we are before we would move forward with other additional years.
Representative Rogers says he respects the spirit of Winkler's amendment, but he doesn't want to commit to more than 1 year of funding because of the state's ongoing revenue problem.
I believe it would be irresponsible for us to make it a commitment, a 10-year, even a 3-year commitment with these dollars. But at the same time, we are addressing this issue, and we are telling districts across the state that there is a difference, and we want to help you out with these transportation costs. I don't think it's about winners and losers. It's about acknowledging that there's a difference in transportation across this state. And you could say that the districts that are paying low costs are already winners. What we're trying to do is have a win-win situation with transportation so that they can address some of these needs that they have. And I can assure you that, just like everything, we'll be back here, like Representative Masher talked about, we'll be back here debating this issue again, and that's what we do, is decide if we have the appropriate amount of dollars to continue this, and we'll be doing it and talking about it and seeing what's best for the state of Iowa.
With not enough support, Winkler withdraws her amendment, but first she mentions a conversation from senators about if they'll accept the modified House version or if they'll stick to the bill they passed last year.
Had a conversation with Senator Smith, asking him what they're going to do when we send this bill over to him. And they have told others that they're going to hold strong on Senate File 455. I can't guarantee that, because I've learned that nothing is guaranteed in this House. And I've learned that promises that are made are not always kept. But I hope that the Senate is true to their word.
Representative Rogers closes by saying this bill will begin to address transportation funding problems right now.
I believe this is a good bill. And it does take us down the road to addressing the transportation and equity issues that we have in our school funding. It's been since the 1980s, since any chamber in this building has addressed those two issues, since the 1980s. And so it's something we decided that it's important for this body to do this year. And I believe it's a good step for us to address this inequity, and again, gives relief to the districts across the state who are really struggling with transportation. And as we talk to a lot of people and listen throughout this whole year, that seemed to be, well, it was, the number one issue that many of the districts were struggling with.
The school transportation bill passes. 92-5. Now it's up to the Senate to pass with the changes or to send it back to the House again. This is Under the Golden Dome from Iowa Public Radio. I'm John Pemble.
Under the Golden Dome is supported by the Iowa Bankers Association. Bankers across Iowa are ready to help Iowans reach their financial goals to get them where they want to go. Learn about the difference of Iowa banks by following Iowa Bankers on Facebook and Twitter.
Governor Reynolds makes it clear she wants to change the Iowa tax code, especially since the federal tax code changed in December. Last week, she released her proposal. On Wednesday morning, a 130-page Senate plan was unveiled. It's different from the governor's in that it reduces taxes over a couple of years instead of a more gradual approach. 24 hours after the bill is released, the Senate Ways and Means Subcommittee meets Wednesday at 8 a.m. In a room filled mostly with lobbyists, Senator Randy Feenstra delivers opening remarks.
10 years ago, I ran and came down here for this reason. My passionate goal was to change the economic environment in the state of Iowa. I want to create a strong economy by reducing Iowa's income tax rates and simplifying our income tax system.
Currently, there are 9 income tax brackets. The bottom 3 are for those making less than $6,300 a year. Presently, they are taxed between 0.3 and 2.4%. Feenstra's bill would raise the taxes to 5% for anyone making less than $6,000. On the other spectrum, right now those making more than $70,000 are taxed at 8.98%. Feenstra's bill would change that to 6.6%, and it would go down to 6.3% by 2022.
The average Iowan will see approximately a $1,000 reduction in their taxes. I look at this and say we must be bold if we want to create a strong economy in Iowa, if we want to create more jobs and higher wages. This bill goes after that and makes it happen.
Right now, corporate taxes are between 8 and 12%. The highest bracket proposed under the bill would be at 10%, and all brackets would drop to 5.5% by the year 2022. The bill also eliminates or reduces some tax credits. Feenstra estimates all of these add up to $1 billion a year by 2020. Ranking member of the subcommittee, Democrat Pam Yoakum, says she supports the idea of giving the middle class more tax breaks, but has concerns about the bill's practicality.
What is, to me, somewhat troubling is that we do not yet have any fiscal impact section by section of the bill. And I think that that is only the responsible thing as we plow our way through this to make sure that this legislation fits within our budget, because we still have responsibilities for essential services like public safety and educating our children and making sure our workers are trained for the jobs of today and tomorrow. And so I think it's incredibly important that we have that fiscal analysis.
Bills often have what is called a fiscal note created by the Nonpartisan Legislative Services Agency. The LSA goes through a bill to determine its financial impact, like how much something would cost or how much money would be saved. This kind of report isn't often at the subcommittee level, especially because a bill at this stage is just being released. The subcommittee listens to feedback from the public, which in this case is mostly lobbyists.
John Steinman, Executive Director of the Iowa Chamber Alliance. We represent the Chambers of Commerce in the state of Iowa in our larger metros.
Steinman says he hasn't been able to go through the entire bill, but his first impression is he likes it.
It's very fair in its treatment to small business with respect to the individual tax code as well as the corporate tax code. The inclusion of the corporate tax code is something that we've long advocated for. If we're going to do substantive tax relief, that we ought to do them together. The notion of doing a permanent coupling with the Internal Revenue Code is very attractive and offers certainty to taxpayers that that we're constantly looking for. And there are a lot of advantages in that, in particular in the context of the reforms that we just saw take place in December in Washington.
Mike Triplett is a lobbyist for the Iowa Emergency Medical Services Association. He is concerned about a tax credit for volunteer emergency medical services and volunteer firefighters. Under this bill, volunteer EMS tax credits are eliminated.
The people who get this tax cut are the ones that have to roll out of bed at 3 o'clock in the morning to respond to a heart attack or a stroke. The people down the street who are also getting the tax cut don't. The people who are in this tax cut and get the benefits for it have to cut their 4th of July's and their Thanksgivings and their Christmases short to respond to a fire or to respond to a medical emergency. So we would encourage you to keep that in there. It's a good thing for rural Iowa specifically.
Derek Sadler, owner of Current Renewable Efficiencies, is worried about the elimination of a tax credit for solar energy. His company installs solar panels.
A little history on, or a little piece on the solar tax credit in Iowa here. It is tied to the federal tax credit that does sunset in a few years anyway. And it is a capped tax credit, unlike a lot of these we're talking about. It's a $5 million tax credit. We see the jobs it creates across Iowa. These are jobs that are being created in rural areas, which is very hard to do in Iowa. I always tell everybody our operations is out of Shell Rock, Iowa, and if anyone knows where that is, there's not a lot of new business investment going into there. So, and we've been able to source stuff that we bought out of state, in state, and we're trying to reinvest. And I believe the numbers are out of that $5 million a year over the past years that it's been in place, we've had over $160 million of reinvestment into Iowa. And a little piece on where that goes is that's going to grain farmers who are struggling with prices. It helps them reduce one of their inputs. It's going to, you know, cattle, hog producers, the guys that we're talking about that need every little advantage they can to keep succeeding in their rural location in Iowa. And for us, we obviously have employees. Obviously, I'm biased because it's my business. But I guess the take-home points that I would want to make to everybody here, and especially the subcommittee and the committee later today that I may not be able to be at, is $5 million investment, 700 plus jobs, $160 million of reinvestment that directly helps our farmers, our ag, our small businesses. And I understand the reason to have large incentives for some of these large companies, but from what I read in the past, 80% of the companies that take this research and development money don't pay state income tax. We do, our employees do, these farmers do, and to us, that I just wanted to highlight that piece. I know there's obviously a lot of interest here, so I won't take any more of your time, but that is a legislation piece that's going away anyway. It's capped and it's going away. So not sure why it needs to be targeted immediately for June, boom, rush this through, and then that's gone in June when we see what it does. So we only ask that you study it along with everything else that you're studying.
The Iowa Credit Union League's lobbyist, Justin Hupfer, is opposed because of the tax rates it will have for credit unions.
It raises taxes to the tune of about $5 million on 20 credit unions in Iowa that represent about 550,000 members that we serve in Iowa. So for us, it's a tax increase, and the practical impact for our credit union members is, like any other tax increase, someone pays for it, and so the impact will be that those half a million plus credit union members will pay more for their car loan, their home loan, the small businesses that they serve will be impacted. Almost half of our small business loans are under $50,000, and we help those businesses with access to credit, and this will raise their cost of credit. So all of that for us seems very contrary to the intent of the bill to help Iowans keep more of their paycheck and help grow the economy. Lastly, the only group that we're aware of that is advocating for that language that's in this bill are the bankers who have 90% of the market in Iowa.
The lobbyist for the Iowa Bankers Association, Sharon Presnell, supports the bill. She says they are particularly supportive of language she says could provide state tax parity between the banking industry and credit unions.
It clearly provides the greatest amount of benefit to both small banks in Iowa and small credit unions. In fact, the majority of credit unions, 90% or more, would actually receive a tax cut from this bill. And it comes at a great time. Loan demand in rural Iowa is growing right now, primarily because of the ag economy. Farmers are in need of more dollars than they were a few years ago. And so It's important that our rural deposits stay in our rural communities, and we're seeing advertising statewide by the largest credit unions in the state trying to mine deposits out of our rural communities so that they can fund their loans in Des Moines and Iowa City.
Mike Ralston from the Iowa Association of Business and Industry says he is undecided.
But in case anybody's taking roll, we wanted you to know there are many, many things in the bill we like. Like other speakers, we've been longtime supporters of simplification and certain things like eliminating federal deductibility, coupling with the federal tax code, all those things. So we thank you for this opportunity to look at this big, bold proposal. We look forward to getting involved. And again, thank you for your time.
As the subcommittee concludes, Senator Pam Yoakum reiterates there are some things she likes about the bill.
Some of us have been advocating the elimination of federal deductibility for quite some time, as well as being able to collect sales tax on online sales. But in light of the fact that we still have not any real fiscal information to help drive and inform our decisions today, I will most likely not be supporting this to move it out of subcommittee today.
The five panelists of the subcommittee vote. 3 yes, 2 no. It's along party lines. 4.5 hours later, in an unusual procedure, the full Ways and Means Committee meets to decide if the bill will advance to the full Senate. But to do so, they have to suspend a rule. The rule prohibits a bill from being discussed in a committee the same day it passes a subcommittee.
Prior to taking up the bill, Senate Rule 39 for standing committees provides that subsection 11 dealing with subcommittees and committee meetings on a bill the same day can be suspended by an affirmative vote of the committee.
The committee votes along party lines to suspend the rules. Some of the bill's provisions would become effective in July, others next January. Feenstra says Republicans are going to make a budget for the next year that allows this plan to get started.
I anticipate we will see a bill through appropriations process to make these necessary adjustments. I can assure you the bill is fiscally responsible, allows Iowans to keep more of their hard-earned money. However, at the same time, we will balance our budget, keep our commitment to repay the cash reserve, fully fund Medicaid, and provide an increase in almost $50 million to K-12 education.
Senator Feenstra says by 2020, the bill should reduce taxes by $1 billion a year.
And we are confident this bill will not negatively affect, impact, or our ability to fund the priorities in Iowa, whether it be education, healthcare, or public safety. While we don't have a 5-year projection at this point, we do believe this bold cut will put money back in the pockets of hardworking Iowans and job creators and will help stimulate an economy, grow jobs, and increase the wealth of Iowans. And from that, the state will see more revenues coming into the general fund. How do you get to an annual $1 billion tax cut? Again, as I noted, we have been working with the Department of Revenue. We have very preliminary estimates that the cost is about $1 billion. Iowans will receive an average reduction of about $1,000 per tax filer, starting as the federal tax table income instead of adjusted gross income, and making adjustments lowering the rates, eliminating federal deductibility, adjusting various tax credits, moving from 9 to 5 brackets, doubling the brackets for married taxpayers, eliminating AMT, moving to automatic coupling, increasing the pension, adjusting the qualified withdrawals for 529 plans to include K-12 tuition, and a number of other changes in the bill. All this is accounted for in the preliminary estimates that will be provided by the Department of Revenue before we get to the floor.
Senator Herman Kornbach questions Feenstra on how the state can operate in 2020 with a $1 billion tax cut.
Again, we are working with appropriations. As I noted, you start getting the money from cutting your credits and deductions. You also get money from, modernizing your sales tax.
Well, that doesn't sound like much of an answer.
Kornbach says he deserves a systematic explanation of how the tax cut will be covered before moving forward.
The Senate passed a bill the other day, make it illegal to drive in fog without turning your headlights on. Well, that's what we're doing here with this bill today. We're driving ahead at about 100 miles an hour with no clue of how we're going to responsibly pay for this. I want to see that budget and how it's going to balance, and my constituents want to know
what sacrifices they're going to have to make in vital services for them and for their students and for their kids and for the whole of their community. I think you owe that to us, and you're not giving it to us here today.
Senator Joel Bolcom also says he needs more information and questions the fast pace with which this bill is being introduced to the committee.
It's really hard for us to judge the value of all these provisions. You've put out a set of talking points that we're just supposed to take on face value. We have a deficit in the current budget. The management by the Republican caucus of this budget has been totally irresponsible. We don't have a balanced budget today. We're sitting here looking at slashing revenue. And from your suggestion a moment ago, the 19 budget, which I think all of us think is going to be extraordinarily tight, probably more cuts coming, you're going to give up $300 million in revenue. You've said about a third of the impact's going to hit in 19. So Sarah Hoge went through a number of the changes that are that Republicans just put through in this deappropriation bill, was $34 million. So you're going to look at another $300 million. We can barely get $34 million out of this current state budget in savings for the 18 budget. In 19, so you're going to give up $300 million, 10 times much revenue. And you're going to, I guess you indicated the appropriate, that'll be the appropriations people's problem, is I think what you said.
As the committee closes, Senator Feenstra says the bill will create economic development.
It says we're open for business. If you ask any business that has come here, they said, hey, the Economic Development Authority had to work us hard to have us understand your complicated rate structure. And then you start wondering how many other businesses went down that path or didn't even look at Iowa. I mean, if you really thought about, all right, do I want to set up in the Midwest? And you quickly open the book and say, let me see, Iowa, 8.98%, 12%. Who else do I have here? Oh, hey, wow. Oh, South Dakota. All right, I wonder where they're going to go. I live 60 miles away from Sioux Falls, South Dakota. That place is wild. It is growing. It is booming. They can't put in the streets fast enough. Why is that? It's because they have a different income tax structure. We want to be a business-friendly state. We want to be bold. We want to be where we can grow. We've been in this stagnant society in Iowa for decades. And what have we done? Let's put another tax credit out there. Let's put another this out there, another deduction. All right. You're right. The last person that sat in this chair, they kept growing from 200 million to 400 million credits, and now do we get rid of them or don't we? Because I've heard many people on the floor, let's get rid of the credits. Not what I heard from the Democrats today. I'm not sure where we should be. I do know where the Republicans want to go. We want to be bold. We want to be a driving factor in our economy. And more importantly, we want to give Iowans money back. We want to put $1,000 in everyone's pocket. Why? Because that helps grow the economy because they can spend it. Mr. Chair, that's into my comments. I simply move the bill.
During this committee, Senator Feenstra is the only Republican to speak. The vote is on party lines. It passes. It is now eligible for debate in the Senate. Senator Feenstra says he doesn't think it will come before the chamber Monday, but that decision lies with the majority leader, Bill Dix. From the time this bill was released Wednesday morning through Thursday afternoon when this committee passed it through, the most common reaction from legislators or lobbyists is they haven't had time to go through the entire bill. This includes Speaker of the House Linda Upmeyer as she talks to reporters Thursday afternoon.
I'm sure you all have questions about the Senate tax bill, so just let me lead with that. We got the bill the same time you did yesterday, so I probably can't answer many questions about that bill. Right now, we have a bill in the House that we are working on. The governor's tax reform bill is assigned to a subcommittee. Representative County is leading that. They're working on that. I anticipate there will be things in the Senate bill that could ultimately become part of that. But right now, that's where we are, and that's about how much I know about the Senate bill.
If the Senate debates and passes Feenstra's version of the bill next week, the House has the option to take it up. When Uppmeyer is asked if the House will do this,
I received the bill the same time you did yesterday. So I think we want to make sure we understand anything we move forward.
For now, Uppmeyer says the House is creating their own bill using the governor's plan as their guide. This is Under the Golden Dome, a weekly podcast about the Iowa legislature. I'm John Pemble. This week, both chambers were busy passing bills.
Those voting aye, 94, nay, 0, absent, aye, voting 6. The bill having received constitutional majority is declared to pass the House. Are there objections to the title?
It was probably hard to understand the fast pace of House Speaker Pro Tem Matt Winschittle. The important part of what he said is, those voting aye, 94, absent or not voting 6, meaning the bill he's talking about passed in the House 94-0. Bills passing with all yes votes are more common than those with a division along party lines. But in this General Assembly, when a bill does have a strong disagreement between the parties, the minority party tends to extend the debate with amendments. In these situations, which happened often last year, the majority party doesn't speak very often on the chamber floor. When a tax bill comes to the floor of the House or Senate, you can expect most of the talk to be from the opposition. For this show, Under the Golden Dome, I receive a great deal of help from my Iowa Public Radio colleagues. My thanks to State House reporter Joyce Russell, our talk show team producers Emily Woodbury, Lindsay Moon, and Ben Stadden. Also thanks to Radio Iowa's Kay Henderson for helping us tell our legislative stories. Iowa Public Radio's news program director is Catherine Perkins. The news director is Michael Leland. This is the 7th show for this legislative session. Before our next show comes out on Friday, listen to some of our previous entries. They're all good, I promise. You can access them by subscribing with your favorite podcast program. They are on our website, iowapublicradio.org, and you can find them on the IPR app for your phone. Under the Golden Dome is a production of Iowa Public Radio.